welcome to our newest debater, Tina.
Thanks, Mr. DeSanto.
You know most of these jokers. Larry's our policy ace, Zach's a research machine, and Todd's a ninja with sarcasm.
Sarcasm, huh? Any good?
No, I'm terrible.
Oh, that's too bad.
Ugh, I was doing it!
TBTL!
What will your first sequence of the day be?
Do we have any new sequences?
I have a beta sequence I've been working on. Would you like to see it?
They had been posting their stuff out on the internet, and apparently they'd been met with virtually nothing but ridicule.
Hey, Paul. I'm Tane, your latest dancer. I can't wait to entertain you.
Now, Tane, I can get into.
I'm sorry, who are you?
I was asking myself that same question, and I did not like the answer.
I should not have brought up baseball. I understand. My mistake. My mistake. You got to know your crowd.
Anybody know what this is? Huh? All of this is the digestive system. And now we're going to have a couple of guys who's going to give us a presentation about what happens when the digestive system isn't working properly.
That and other things will be discussed right here, right now on this Thursday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It's the story of a man with a brothel of a home and a pool filled with human excrement.
I'm that man, your host, Luke Burbank, coming to you from the Bay City, Bellingham, Washington, and the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, which is, of course, perched atop Alabama Hill.
Attention, everyone! I have an announcement to make! I am leaving this party!
Nailed it. God, that timing was... Every once in a while, I get the timing just perfect on one of these things, and I think you'll all agree that was one of those times. Let's see, the pod dog.
He was a little dog named Snuggles.
Pod dog is bummed today, my friends, because we have some folks here doing some work in the yard, and the pod dog would like to be out there harassing them, but she is being kept in the backyard here at Burbank Springs. Meanwhile, the Bay Kitty is free to roam the entire yard and do her thing, which she is currently doing. Our thing is episode 2407 in a collector series. Coming at you right now.
Let the fun begin.
Let's try to get all that out of my system right here at the top of the show. Went for a jog today, and it's pretty warm here in Bellingham, and I may have cooked my brain a little bit. So everybody bear with me for the next hour or so. Here's the plan for the program. Speaking of cooking your brain, or at least making dumb decisions, a dean at Yale has been fired after she posted a bunch of just like really snarky restaurant reviews on Yelp.
I wish I hadn't done that.
What a dumb reason to lose your job as one of the deans of Yelp. Of Yale. Although if they combined and they started a new online institution called Yelp, that would be kind of cool. I'd go there. The other thing I want to talk about today is this insane treasure hunt in the Southwest. Another person has passed away trying to find about $2 million in treasure.
Give me the gold. I want the gold.
That an eccentric Santa Fe art dealer claims he is buried somewhere out there in the wilderness. He gives hints in the form of poetry in his memoir that he wrote. And some people say there's not even any treasure out there. He's just making it up to try to sell his memoir. So we'll talk about that too. And emails and V-mails and so much more. Starting with saying hello to this man. He's in the Wallingford neighborhood of Seattle, Washington, the Hodor of podcasting. Bought a hot air balloon, but it doesn't mean he thinks he can draw tall ships. You know, Beachbody season is just around the corner. And so he's been trying all kinds of new sort of workout plans and systems, including
360 spins and slam dunk pointers.
And I think it's paying off. He's Andrew Walsh, and he joins us now. Hello, my dude.
You can just call me Tane. I'm here to entertain you.
Now, that's something I can get into.
I put that in there just for you, man.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. You'd think that I'd be off to a hot start since some of my favorite Paul Rudd, Tim and Eric related comedy was playing at the top of the show, but I'm off to, I would call it, a medium start.
Well, then I realized I messed up a little bit there because we kind of double dipped on the on the
Kristen Schaal.
Sorry about
that.
A lot
of Kristen Schaal.
Very different characters, though.
Can you get too much, though? I mean, can you have too much Kay Schaal?
I cannot. I am madly in love with everything that she does. I believe yours was from Last Man Standing, and the intro was
from Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, well, that was a little deconstruction of what we've already done in the first 4 minutes. What else we got?
Well, I want to just tell you, you're welcome, that I didn't start you with an audio drop about a certain fart transplant procedure, because I was tempted, and I'm wondering, were you expecting me to do that?
I assumed that we got a cease and desist on that. I saw we got a note from our boss yesterday, and our boss, I think, should be on vacation. He wants to have a meeting with us. I assume that is 100% related to your choice of drops lately. As a matter of fact, the reason I'm convinced of that is because I sent him a note, and I said, I think we need to break up your vacation so we can have a quick emergency TBTL meeting.
Now, you're saying vacation. He got married. Do you feel like it's inappropriate for us to announce that he got married?
I honestly, every time I open my mouth on the show, part of my brain is saying, is this inappropriate to say? So, I don't know. Maybe.
Are we not allowed to say when people get married? Is that like a thing?
I don't know. Congratulations, Nate, our fine boss, on your new nuptials.
Yeah. And I pray to God, we do have to have a meeting with him on Monday, and pray to God it's not because you were emailing him yesterday during what is either his marriage or his honeymoon or the aftermath of his marriage, saying, Luke won't stop playing a fart transplant drop and I don't like it. Because Carrie and I, we listened to yesterday's show on the drive home from Seattle. And I did fire that drop with absolute abandon. But I will tell you that in the car driving home, I laughed each and every time I heard it. You probably didn't have the same reaction.
Yeah, I know you did. I like that. Your evidence A is I continued to laugh at
my
own drop.
No, but a lot of times, actually, I get on some kind of a sort of thing where I think that it's really funny at the time. But then I look back on it later and I'm like, that was not funny. And like, but this one stood the test of time. Up to 3 hours later, I still thought it was a decent spoof.
Well, that's a pretty good spoof.
And by the way, that's the same guy from the fart transplant.
You're right. It is. I want to say, speaking of that, okay. No, that's not my favorite drop. But it reminds me of a post that I saw on Facebook today from actually a friend of the show, Michelle, who just kind of put out there on the Facebook page wondering if you and I are okay. And I actually think that, like, as in our relationship.
Wait, okay, like as friends?
As friends and coworkers, because, and I understand why she would feel this way. So I just want to clear the air here. We're not okay. No, of course we are. You know what? It was a combination of two jokes, sort of, yesterday in the intro you had just mentioned at some point, Andrew and I were hashing some things out before the show. I think we were just having a meeting or something like that. But I had kind of made this prolonged joke in the newsletter this week why there was no video. And I just said that I think the quote was something like, you and I are just going through some things that podcast hosts go through sometimes, but it's not your fault, dear listeners. Something along those lines. No, our video guy was just out. The guy who edits our videos for us. He was on vacation.
And that was
last week's
newsletter. This week's newsletter will have a Hey Dummies video because we have already shot it
in
with
person.
Cinematography by one Carrie Bolden Burbank.
Yeah. That's my wife.
So anyway, I just want to let everybody know, for in case you were kind of thinking, boy, they were just on this week-long road trip. There were no explosions on the road trip. Is the book going to fall? Are they holding back a bunch of negative feelings about each other? The answer to that is I can hold these feelings back for a really long time. I've done it with other relationships. So
nobody sits
good.
With it like Andrew Walsh, my friend.
You and I are showmates, dude. I got your back.
That's
make
right.
sure nobody f***s with you.
Anyway, yeah. True story.
I said this right after the road trip, and I'm hoping that this is mutual, but I can only speak for myself to say I feel like our friendship is stronger than ever as a result of all that time spent together.
I agree.
I think that's a positive.
And our working relationship. I don't know if you separate those things. That was such. I feel like that was such a good trip for the show. Not just because, well, now I'm just hurting my shoulder, patting myself on the back, but and for
Y'all.
Some reason going into a southern accent that's not very good. Sorry about that, everybody, especially the South. But we just had like hours, like 10 to 12 hours on end just to talk about TBTL and things that we want to do in the future and cool ideas and things we can experiment with and guests we might have on some days. There was nothing to do but talk about work, and I love talking about work with you. So I honestly, it really was. It was a good time, and everything's cool.
Yeah, we hatched some plans, and we cooked up some schemes, and we cut up a couple of jackpots, and we had a great time. Yeah, it was actually professionally – still weird to think this is our profession, mm-hmm. but professionally it was really good for us because we basically had about 11 hours of time to meet each day as we drove from one place to another. So we have a lot of cool plans in store for the show in the coming months, and some of those plans were hatched in Hatch, New Mexico, which is kind of cool. This is a little out of the blue, a little off topic, but I just wanted to, because we are such good friends and colleagues,
mm-hmm.
I want to tell you that I went on to the Netflix last night, and I was just actually going to watch some Bob's Burgers. But before I could get there, it was offering me various documentary choices. I watch a lot of documentaries. I like those. And it offered one up called Betting on Zero, which is about Herbalife. Are you familiar with Herbalife at all?
You kind of tangentially. I have two friends who... one of them is a reporter who's done some stories on it and is obsessed with what appears to be a, I'll just say, scam. On the other side, I have a friend who is a freelancer, and Herbalife is a huge client of theirs. So, or at least used to be. So, yeah, I'm familiar with it in that way, but I've never actually... I only know the very, very kind of wide strokes on that, so...
Well, it's just, I mean, yeah, it's a multi-level marketing thing. It's I don't think I'm saying anything slanderous to say. And we probably have people in our audience who have sold Herbalife or tried to and maybe are still doing it. And if it's working for you, I guess I'll say congratulations. But I mean, it's one of those things. The definition of a pyramid scheme is anything where the money that's generated is not from selling whatever the ostensible product is. Like in this case, it's like health powders and teas and things. You don't make money from selling the thing. You make money from getting other people to join and buy up a bunch of the product so that they can supposedly sell it, and then you get a cut of them buying up the product. So it just basically involves everybody trying to get their friends to get in on the quote-unquote business, but then what their friends have to do is go out and spend $5,000 on a bunch of powders that they will ultimately not be able to sell, but you'll get a commission on those powders. Mm-hmm. And then if they want to keep in the game, they got to find people to buy a bunch of powders. And what everyone who's coming into it doesn't realize is nobody wants the powders. You know, this reminds me, by the way, of the time that my dad decided to, my mom and dad really, and let's be honest, I bet it was more my mom than my dad. The Burbank parents decided that they were going to make some extra money for the family by getting into Amway. So they got caught up in one of these where one of their friends who was trying to create a downline got my mom and dad to do it. But it's kind of funny because my dad is just whatever makes someone good at selling flim flam. Mm-hmm. My dad ain't got it. And it's one of the things I love about him.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I remember him doing this. They held an Amway party and nobody came. So us kids just sat and they did the demo.
Is that a Morrissey song?
It is. And my dad did the Amway demo for us kids, and none of the shit worked. it was supposed to be like, well, look at this product. The leading product gets this rag with a stain on it this clean. And then he has like two bowls on the table, and like, you know, one has the leading brand and one has Amway, and he pulls out the leading brand and it's whatever. You can still see the stain. And then he pulls out the Amway brand and you can still see the stain. There's no discernible difference. And it's because that stuff, and I know we probably have lots of listeners who've sold that stuff too, and no judgment of what anybody's doing, but it's like those products are also not in and of themselves amazing products. They're just a way to trick people into buying huge quantities of something they think they're going to be able to sell so that you get some of the money from them when they buy those products. So anyway, I stumbled on this thing, but what was really fascinating about this movie, first of all, it's really well done, but it's sort of really the story of this sort of, he's an activist investor. He's a guy who basically took $1 billion short position on Herbalife. So he basically bought $1 billion worth of Herbalife stock, assuming it was going to go out of business. And if it were to go out of business or the stock were to plummet in value, he would make money. And if the stock goes up in value, he loses money. It's a kind of a tricky financial thing that you can do, which I've heard before, but I've never really understood how shorting a stock works. And it's the story of this guy really trying to take on. I mean, he's a billionaire, so it's like he's not the most sympathetic character because he's, you know, he's a super rich dude. But he also is, he says anyway, donating any money, any profits he makes from this, he's donating it because he just hates Herbalife. He just wants Herbalife to go down. But then, Andrew, there's this other billionaire named Carl Icahn who hates the first guy. So he's like buying Herbalife stock just pretty much 100% to spite the other dude.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
He doesn't like Herbalife. He just hates the other guy.
Yeah, well, I mean, he probably, to some degree, he sees it as a business opportunity because he thinks that Herbalife will continue. I mean, it's publicly traded. What they've done that's amazing is they've legitimized the shit out of a basically totally illegitimate business. So they're traded, you know, on Wall Street. They're a publicly traded company. They're like Madeleine Albright has been a spokesperson for it.
Jeez.
Like they sponsored the jerseys of the MLS team in L.A., for some period of time. Like they've made so much money over the years. You know what it reminded me so much of? Scientology.
Yeah.
Like the parallels were just striking because they have these big like hype conventions where they get all of their, you know, everyone's dream is to get into what's called the president's circle or the president's council. That's if, you know, you get, I don't know how many people you got to get slinging these vitamin powders, but if you get to that level, you've really made it and you're making a ton of money. I mean, there are people out of like, I don't know what it is, 3 million people doing this. There are like 9 people making a shitload of money. So if you like your chances, 9 in 3 million, I mean, I guess it can be a thing. But anyway,
these somebody, Luke. It's got to be somebody.
It's right. Well, believe me. I mean, I say this. This sounds like a brag, but it's really not if you think about the consequences. But I would dominate at one of these flim-flam businesses. If I really put my mind to it, if I just said my goal is to get as many people as I can selling candles under me or whatever, I think, unfortunately, I would do pretty well with it because I think I'm a fairly persuasive person. I would also cry myself to sleep every night.
Do you think your mom would be good at that? You mentioned that your dad kind of gave the demonstrations. That's not really his forte. I could be wrong about this, but I think a lot of your maybe I'm totally wrong about this, but is some of your showmanship and people kind of people skills, does that come from your mom, either by nature or nurture, do you think?
I think my outgoing personality is very much from my mom. She's a super outgoing person, and people really love being around her. I think the nuts and bolts of one of these things would be challenging for her, like keeping it all together, keeping her downline in order. Like my wife did Mary Kay for a hot minute and would tell me about these, you know, and it's another one of these things. The thing about Mary Kay that's interesting to me is that, like, my wife actually still wears, I don't think I'm talking out of school when I say
that's my wife.
She still wears pull-ups just sometimes to get through the night without winning the bet. No, she still wears, I don't know what kind of makeup she wears, but I know some of it is Mary Kay, and she's been buying it from the same lady for 20 years. So the thing I'll say about Mary Kay is I do think that people do use the product for whatever reason, or at least some people do. But she told me these stories of like going to like a hotel ballroom in, somewhere in the Skagit Valley, and all the Mary Kay ladies were getting their like, you know, it was one of these like hype it up meetings, like everyone's getting their award for selling X amount of thing or signing X number of people up. And I want to say just imagine this is a room full of like white ladies in their 40s and 30s. And I want to say they were playing Everybody Dance Now by CNC Music Factory, or just some just like extremely incongruent music as they were like going up to the stage to get their award for whatever level they had achieved. But anyway, so back to this documentary. It's just fascinating on so many levels because it's fascinating to find out what a scam this Herbalife is, it's fascinating to find out about what shorting a stock actually looks like, and then to see just the kind of just long simmering beef between these two super rich dudes and how they're just trying to, and I apologize, I'll use a sort of a coarse term here, they're just trying to cock block each other at every turn because they don't like each other. And there are these interviews where they're both on CNBC, like Squawk Box on the phone, arguing
really?
With each other, like pro wrestlers, these like billionaires, because they had lunch when the younger guy who's the younger guy is the one who's really anti Herbalife, and I guess he had lunch with the older guy Carl Icahn, and Carl Icahn thought he was a little sanctimonious, and they just have this, like, they really have like a WWF style just beef and dislike for each other. But there's, of course, also billions of dollars at stake.
This is a little bit off topic, but everything you're talking about with Mary Kay and this and what's the thing that your dad was trying to sell? I always forget the
Amway.
I never had any experience with Amway, but if anybody wants to get rich, here's my advice to you.
Okay.
Invite me to your Tupperware party. Because I haven't had Tupperware since I was a kid. I grew up with Tupperware. My mom was in these Tupperware circles somehow. Well, not somehow. I think it's pretty obvious. I don't really live a life where a lot of the people in my life are inviting me over to Tupperware parties. But anytime I'm at somebody's house or I see it on, like, maybe in a scene on television, an old Tupperware container from my youth, I'm like, why is nobody inviting me to their Tupperware parties? I will buy every single thing. I will buy the cool, like, lettuce crisper that has the drain on the bottom, so it's half colander, half sealed Tupperware. I will buy one of those. I might even buy two of those. Like, there are so many things. I'll buy the homemade popsicle sticks that we used to eat frozen ice off of as a kid. I'm going to buy it all. Half of it out of usefulness, half of it out of nostalgia.
Andrew, good news.
Yeah?
I'm at Tupperware.com, and apparently the new thing is to throw an online Tupperware party.
Oh, so that's so funny. Now it's online, but it's still a party. Like, why don't we just make it online shopping?
And here's the thing, Andrew. It's as easy as 1, 2, free. Register as an e-host by using your name and email address. Invite your lucky guests by submitting the name and email address of each person you want to invite. Your guests will receive an email invitation with a special link to begin browsing your online party. If you sell $200 to $299 worth of Tupperware at your online party, Andrew, you will get a $20 award. If you sell $500 or more Tupperware in your online Tupperware party, you will get a $50 award.
It seems, I mean, now in the age of the internet, it especially seems like a scam, right? And actually, I mean, I really like Tupperware stuff, although I'm looking at the stuff they're showing on their website right now, and I don't want any of this newfangled stuff. I want the stuff from my youth, which I could probably just throw an eBay party for that. But with all the online shopping and the ability to go on and order whatever you want, the fact that they're still saying, yeah, we're going to need you to throw an online party, it makes it very clear that they're not selling Tupperware here. Right? This is all, like, you were calling downline. I've never heard that term before, but I think I understand what you mean. It's all about getting more people involved.
Yeah, and I think every once in a while, there is, like, everybody has Tupperware in their house, and maybe it's not technically a Tupperware brand, but it's something like that. But, I mean, there was a period of time where I'm sure that with all the Tupperware – this was very the 80s. If you're our age, you remember this, but – there were lots of Tupperware parties going on, and I'm sure that some of the people who bought that stuff, like, they used it and they, you know, kept their leftovers slightly fresher because of it. But even in those cases, the real way you make money with any of these things, and now I'm going right on the edge of talking out of school, but I'll say that with being a little, you don't know any of these people, Andrew, but there's some friends of my wife's who took her out to lunch when she was in LA. And sat her down and were, like, telling her about this new awesome business that they were doing. And what she realized, I think slightly to her horror by the end of the lunch, was, and they were trying to get her to be a part of this awesome business opportunity. And I just have to say, I mean, granted, this is a show where it only exists. I'm talking about TBTL now because we ask people to donate money. But that is voluntary. We have not taken you to lunch and sat you down and looked across the table and said, would you like to be involved in a dynamic home business that helps people save money on their phone bill or whatever? Like, that is that's the toughest ask of all time. And if I wasn't able to become a President Circle member of Herbalife, it would probably be because I don't think I could actually unleash this on any of my friends.
Yeah. And I would say, I guess just to say one thing about the TV telethons is we really tried to make it as transparent as possible, right? Like, and we're not kind of – we're not trying to make it sound like we're selling you Tupperware, but really we want you to sign up a bunch of your friends. We're just saying give us your money. It's going to go towards the show. Like, it's as simple as that. It's
right.
I try not to be so gauche about it, but that's it. If you donate, it goes towards the stuff we need to make the show go.
Yeah, and we actually make the show 5 days a week too, which is – that's the difference between us and Herbalife, is that Herbalife – is allegedly about selling this health product, but nobody buys the health product. And so really it's about this other thing. Ours is a pretty direct thing here. It's like, we do exist because of the generosity of our listeners, but if people don't like it, they don't have to donate. And we do at least put five of these up a week. So we do deliver on what the alleged sort of business deal is. Hey, speaking of which, we have 12 or 16 people that donated during last year's. Okay, I'm not talking about the road to Austin. I'm talking about the previous year's TBTelethon. And somehow, through the magic of paperwork and spreadsheet, we managed to omit thanking these people. And so, my goodness gracious, we've got to do that right now. And also, I just want to say,
I'm sorry.
We got some we got some make goods here, Andrew.
All right. These are people who donated.
These people, and by the way, to these people, if you donated again during last year's TBTelethon, you are going to get thanked two times in 1 year.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, so you won this lottery.
Yes, you did. You stored up your treasures in heaven, and welcome to heaven, because you're not going to get thanked once this year. You're getting thanked twice. This is the first of two thankings. These folks donated during the TBTelethon, and those donations made the entire year between TBTelethons possible. And we want to say thanks to Bob Stein of Downington, Pennsylvania. I believe Bob Stein, if I'm thinking of the same Bob Stein of Downington, Pennsylvania, is a contra dancer.
You are absolutely right. Yes, yes. Bob will often write into the show, and sometimes he will weigh in on contra dancing related issues as they come up in the show, which they often
sure.
do.
Would it be overdoing it to call him our contra dancing correspondent?
He is one of three.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, I'm pretty bad. Sure. I'm
that's
pretty sure.
Bad.
I'm pretty sure he rules.
And weirdly, Chris Hayes is the other two.
He's got a lot of interests.
Candy Norris Brewster of Port Murray, New Jersey. Thank you, Candy Norris Brewster. We really appreciate it. And Ann Lundholm of New Brighton, Minnesota, and Christine Wagner of beautiful Tacoma, Washington, a Tacomi. Bob, Candy, Ann, and Christine, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. We are very sorry for the delay, but just know that we appreciate it, and we couldn't be doing this show without you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm sorry, so sorry. Please accept my
hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, our top story, Dr. June Chu, who was a dean at Yale, has stepped down after the Yale Daily News published screenshots of various Yelp reviews that she had written of restaurants and establishments in and around New Haven. That's where Yale is, right?
Mm-hmm. New Haven? I think so. Yeah. Yeah. New Haven.
She called people white trash. She called movie theater workers barely educated morons. And she has now had to step down after these Yelp reviews were exposed. One of the things that she wrote for a movie theater, she wrote a harsh review of the concession workers. She wrote, so what they have there is barely educated morons trying to manage snack orders for the obese, and also try to add $7 plus $7. Her review of a Japanese restaurant. If you are white trash, this is the perfect night for you, she wrote in one review.
Which that seems kind of odd. I don't think of a lot of like I mean, not that we should even use the term white trash, but even if you're going to, you know, go in for that stereotype and quasi epithet, then you don't really think that the stereotype is, okay, now let's go get some Japanese food.
Honey boo boo.
I was trying so hard not to do that.
All right. Y'all kids get ready because we going down to Benihana.
I'm glad.
That's really, you know what, Benihana is not even a great example of Japanese food because it's its own category of kind of sort of theatrical cooking.
Thank
but you're right, that is
the bullet,
a weird
though. I know that you could hear my brain stopping myself like trying to explain something, but then I didn't want to give into the stereotypes, and I can always count on you to just belly up and take care of that for me.
What you're also not mentioning is that Dr. Chu was recently married, or as you call it, on vacation.
That, I don't know. That was not, like, I don't know. I just said on vacation. I just didn't feel like it. Seemed like it just complicated the story to get into the details. Like, I wasn't.
No, your discretion is, you know what? Your discretion is appreciated. I'm sure that if you got into a Sonos beta test, you would actually get the Alexa skill added because you wouldn't have screwed it up for yourself, Andrew.
No.
And I have only myself to blame, okay? This is on me.
So now you're just like, you're naming the company now because like they specifically reject you or did you just never hear back?
I just haven't heard from them and I assume it's because they heard me D-ing when I had agreed N to D-A.
Anyway.
It really broke my heart.
Are there
because
any
I was...
Are there any more good dazzling details, though? I'm actually loving – I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't, but I'm getting –
That's a response from Sonos.
Great – I'm getting great perverse pleasure out of these just awful reviews.
Looking at Christine Hauser's piece in The Times, there is a link to some more of the reviews that the Yale Daily News have had. I don't have them in front of me, but I will tell you that she wrote an extremely humbled letter – upon leaving the university. Is Yale technically a university? Yale University.
Yale University, Dartmouth College.
Okay, there you go. Sometimes, and Lord knows, I say this with peace and love to any of the Yaleys in the audience, I know we have a few. Lord knows you do not want to mess that kind of stuff up when you're talking about the Ivies. You know what I mean? If you went to Dartmouth, if you went to Yale, if you went to Harvard, you know if it was a university or a college and you are not suffering fools when it comes to misidentifying where you or your parents' money went to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
One of my favorite recurring jokes in 30 Rock is when Topher will say, oh, yeah, well, I went to school in Boston. Well, not in Boston, just outside of Boston. And then everybody cuts him off right before he says Harvard.
You know, I'm trying to think of the people that I know who went to Harvard, which is not a long list. There's one, and I shan't name them, but there's one who really does – like you're pointing out, a lot of people who I've met who went to Harvard, they will say, I went to school in Boston. That's like – that's kind of the code for I went to Harvard, but it's like I don't want to mic drop in the middle of this conversation about burritos. So I'm just going to say I went to school in Boston. People who went to the University of Washington like I did, we don't have that problem. It's not a record scratcher. You just say I went to the UW. It's not going to define – the people are not going to measure the conversation in terms of before and after they learned you attended the University of Washington.
This is a huge conversation change. But do you mind if I just jump on that for a second, Luke?
Please.
Because this really gets at the heart, I think, of my – I don't know, love of, relationship with, fascination – towards Seattle. When Veeves and I first moved out here, this was the first time we ever lived on the West Coast, and it couldn't have been more different. And this is definitely not a brag, because I certainly did not go to Harvard. I went to the opposite of Harvard, which is Kent State University. But because my first job was in New Hampshire, and I was dating Genevieve, who was in Boston, and I think it's okay. I mean, I assume it's okay. Genevieve went to kind of a fancy school. She went to a Wellesley College for Women. And so because of that, like when I was first dating Genevieve and we were having house parties and all that, the vast majority of those guests were Dartmouth guys or I can, Dartmouth is, has been co-ed for years. Dartmouth students, but also tons of Harvard students. I mean, I was I probably have a bit of a complex or had a bit of a complex being kind of the dumb guy in the room at all of these parties. And that it was just kind of normal, though. And moving out to Seattle, I think I liked this. Genevieve didn't at first, although she's come totally around, is Seattle seemed a little provincial compared to that, whereas you would meet somebody in Boston and you'd always hear, I went to this school or that school or this school or that school, and I'm from this other part of the country. And it seemed like in Seattle, people were like, yeah, I'm from Seattle or Puyallup or Tacoma or whatever. And I went to the UW, or sometimes I went to Wazoo. And just everybody went to the same schools. And I think Genevieve, I think it's okay to say this, I think Genevieve might have had a little bit of a snobbiness. I don't know if she'd admit to that or not when she first came out here. Now she works for the UW, could not be a bigger advocate of public education, and she just couldn't have turned around more on that issue. But for me, I'm still kind of fascinated by it. And I was thinking about a conversation we had the other day. We're talking about Angie, I can never pronounce her last name, Mankink. Angie.
Oh, Mentink.
Mentink of she covers the Mariners for Root Sports, the TV station out here. And I brought her up, and you mentioned she went to the UW around the time you were at the UW, right?
Yeah. And played softball there.
And of course, Brock Heward was a football star there, but he's like a media guy I listen to all the time now on the radio. And I think there have been other people too. And there's so many people who I just know from afar, and they all kind of went to the UW, and a lot of them went to the UW when you went there. And there's this, I used the word provincial before, which I think has negative connotations, sadly. I actually really like it. I think it's so cool that so many of these people that I admire all are kind of this community way more than the world of transplants that I think I came from before this.
So it's more like you feel like there's a sense of community because everybody kind of, a lot of people around here were born in the area, went to, you know, sort of maybe it was UW or some other school, and they're still kind of around the area, which in a way seems kind of a little bit like, wow, you didn't stray far. But on the other hand, it means everybody kind of knows each other and there's a sort of shared experience, as opposed to like the place where there's the least shared experience probably is, I'd say, Manhattan. And then the place that has the second lowest occurrence of shared experience is probably Los Angeles, mm-hmm. you know? And so if you're working, if you're working through it in that fashion, Seattle's probably somewhere, you know, down the list. It probably roughly follows the size of city to some degree, although that's not true because like Houston's a huge city and you probably have lots of people that were born in Houston and still live in Houston. But
I think
anyway,
with geography, you had mentioned a sense of community. I would actually say a sense of shared history that I'm fascinated by and am a little bit jealous of. And that goes to everything from, you know, the local sketch comedy show that was here almost live that was big in the 80s and 90s when you were coming up, or even the music scene that came from here. Like that was all a shared experience for this generation of people that now I'm kind of like, you know, I'm here after all that stuff and I still love this city and this community, but I just love that you were all part of that together.
I was able to find the source material on Dr. June Chu's Yelp reviews, Andrew, and I can just quickly lay a couple more on you because I actually think I feel like the story is expanding even as we talk about it, because like there's what she actually wrote in these Yelp reviews, and then there's the larger question of like who the flip writes this many Yelp reviews, and what is the psychology of the kind of person who feels like they need to weigh in on every little thing on Yelp, right? Like that's a certain kind of person. And I know you've written a Yelp review or two, and you try to be careful that all your Yelp reviews aren't necessarily negative.
50-50 is my rule. Never dip below that.
The place that Dr. Chu was saying was the Japanese restaurant of choice for white trash people was called Koto Japanese Restaurant. She said, to put it quite simply, if you're a white trash, this is the perfect night for you. This establishment is definitely not authentic by any stretch of any imagination, and perfect for those low-class folks who believe this is a real night out. Oversalted and greasy food. Side note, employees are Chinese, not Japanese.
Yikes.
Wow.
Yeah, at first I was like, boy, can you get fired just for leaving some nasty reviews? But yeah, when you start bringing race and class into it,
oh yeah,
that's bad.
She kind of
She really fires in hot with that whole line of reasoning. Her review of the Mochi store starts with these words. Remember, : I am Asian. I know mochi. These are not good and overpriced. They are ice cream mochi, which are small in size and easily become freezer burned if not store well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She liked the Criterion Cinemas movie theater, so that was good, except that she did not like that the movie started 10 to 15 minutes after the announced time. She was fairly impressed with a restaurant called John Davenport's, where she went for Thanksgiving. She was not a fan of Donut Crazy. Underwhelming for the price. I have tried the Nutella, cannoli, and the Oreo chocolate type of one. I would rather buy a jar of Nutella and some chewy white bread. Cashiers were also a bit confused about who was to ring me out for the purchase of one donut. Which, by the way, a theme really starts to emerge with Dr. Chu, which is she does not like it when the staff of any of these places give her any kind of lip. She hated Retro Fitness. She said, this is probably the crappiest gym I have been to around the world. I give it 2 stars. The front desk person this morning, Bethany, was the rudest person and just full of attitude. Seriously, I don't care if you would, quote, lose your job. Parenthetically, I'm sure McDonald's would hire you, but you are the frontline customer service person. So she obviously had a run-in with Bethany at Retro Fitness. Her take on the entertainment cinemas, this is one of maybe the one that really got her in trouble too. She said, good Lord, talk about idiocy and incompetence. Why the hell in this day and age would there be no separate line for just tickets? So what they have is barely educated morons trying to manage snack orders for the obese and also try to add $7 plus $7, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Fireball, she seems, though?
Well, I mean, look, she comes off as a pretty terrible human being in these reviews, wouldn't you say? I mean, she's just kind of like – she just sounds like she goes into most places. If anything isn't her liking, she takes it up with the employees. If their response isn't perfect for her, she gets into it with a lawn care company, like Townline Lawn Care LLC. She's like fighting with them. Clearly, this is the screen cap is of like the fourth message in the chain with the guy who owns Townline Lawn Care. And she says – well, anyway, it's too convoluted to get into. But the point is, she just seems to be battling everybody all the time. Now, I guess your question is that a fireable offense? Probably what happened was Yale sat down with her and said, we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. And she probably chose to do it the easy way. I bet they offered her some sort of severance and you know, maybe they won't write her a bad review. Now, the New York Times got a hold of it, so that might have – that might have torpedoed the plan for it to be a sort of quiet departure for her. But the other thing, though, that I kind of wanted to talk about with this is just what a friggin' mafioso-esque racket Yelp is. Just as a thing, don't you think?
I just don't think that she should have been fired. But
you don't think she should have been fired?
I mean, I just think that she should have maybe been reprimanded. I mean, so she's the dean of one of their colleges, right? So one of their like kind of off main campus colleges. So that's a very important
Pearson College
job,
by the way.
Yeah, so I understand that. And I understand, like, let's just say that, you know, you and I have outward-facing jobs as well. We do this show. And so then I know that listeners have kind of, like, posted about my Yelp reviews before because I've talked about it on the show. So when I'm posting something on Yelp, I'm also aware of the fact that somebody who only knows me through the show may read my reviews. So that's on my mind. And I do think it's important to, you know, if I was this person's boss, I would definitely take it up with her and I would talk to her about it. It seems like the worst offenses was, I mean, she brought up race, but I don't know if that you would consider that racist. I kind of wouldn't. White trash is not acceptable, absolutely, but it still seems like you tell them to knock it off and you delete it and you have to offer an apology, you know, and the newspaper's covering this, so you offer an apology. I just – honestly, this seems – unless there is other stuff going on, doesn't this seem totally like second chance town? Like you give her a second chance.
Yeah, maybe. Let me tell you what Stephen Davis said. He's the head of Pearson College's administration office. He sent this email out to the students. He said that when this first came to light – He sat down with Dr. Chu, and Dr. Chu assured him and the others that, quote, she had only posted two troubling reviews on social media. He said he later found out that she was, in fact, responsible for multiple reprehensible posts, enough to represent a more widespread pattern. The additional posts that surfaced compounded the harm of the initial two, and they also further damaged my trust and confidence in Dean Chu's accountability to me and ability to lead the students of Pearson College. So it sounds like it was sort of the cover-up or the minimizing. The lying to her boss was kind of got her ultimately in worse trouble.
Okay. I'm glad to know that. And then, yeah, you can't go and lie to your boss and try to cover it up and stuff like that. You're definitely making it worse. So that's context that I'm personally glad to have. And as far as Yelp is concerned, I know that you asked me if I think it's a racket. I don't think of it in that way as sharply as you do, because I know that you've had your personal experiences, I believe it's your sister, right, who her whole job is to try to like quell people.
Well, not anymore, thank God. But yeah, for a while, my sister worked at I guess it is her job too, in a way, because her and her husband have a restaurant in Portland, which is awesome. It's called Pollo Bravo. Everybody should go to it, Pine Street Market. But when my sister worked at this other restaurant in town, one of her main jobs was to try to go into Yelp and just like placate or, comfort people who had written bad reviews, because those kind of bad reviews are just so devastating to your business. And I guess I don't want to say what you're going to say, Andrew, but I mean, there is probably on the argument for Yelp on the side of it's like it's nice to have information about a place. But what the reason I say it's like a protection racket is because Yelp is like, hey, we're going to set this website up and everybody's going to talk about your company. And if you have one wingnut who didn't like your restaurant or your movie theater or whatever, and they write a really bad review, there's a way that you could get that taken down, but you're going to have to pay us a little bit of money. Like before Yelp existed, there was no reason why you would have to pay Yelp money to get the Yelp review down. But now that Yelp exists, and that's how it works, by the way, is that if you want to have certain privileges within Yelp, if you're a business, you can pay to be a certain kind of member, and you can have a more ability to kind of control what your image on Yelp is. That's why it feels like a protection racket.
That's BS. You can't try to make it seem like it's a democratic, small d democratic website where everybody has a voice, but if you pay into it, then you can control what your own message is. That you're absolutely right, because then it becomes something else. Do you want to have an opportunity to laugh at me a little bit here? Because
yeah,
every now and then I get worked up and I write a bad review on Yelp. Like I say, I always
I know you wrote that one about the Euro place, which thought when you described it to me, I thought you acted completely appropriately.
In which, by the way, I went back and I updated it. You can update your reviews. I went back, had a really good experience at the Euro place, and then instead of just deleting it, I had an opportunity just to update it. So I just wrote back. I'm like, hey, I think I just had one bad experience, because I went back and the service was great and the food was great.
Awesome.
And but I think I told you about this. I told you about this evening off the air. I'm just going to read my review first. It is so, Luke. This is one of those things like sending an email when you're mad. You know you shouldn't
never
be
do that,
doing
thank
it.
Thank God.
Hey, dummies. You know you shouldn't be doing it, right? Like every part of your brain is still working and it's saying don't. But then there's some other chemical flowing through you and you're just like, I'm just going to do it. I need to do this. This is not super nasty, but it's just so... I always feel so damn pathetic when I write one of my negative reviews. And this time I tried to cut it a little bit. It's for Little Water Cantina.
Oh, you're right.
Overpriced taco place.
I bet I know what was at issue.
I'm going to read it. This is really embarrassing. I'm never proud of these goddamn things. I'm going to read it and then we can tell the backstory. Little Water Cantina, 3 stars. They advertise pineapple sangria. You get excited. You make a special trip. When you get there, they say they just ran out, even though it's only 8 p.m. They don't apologize. You order other overly priced food and drinks. As you leave at 9:30, you see that they are still advertising pineapple sangria on the sidewalk sign. You write a catty review on Yelp to warn others and make yourself feel better. somehow you just feel worse. And I posted a photo of their sign that says pineapple sangria, which is $9, by the way. The backstory. Oh, I posted the photo of it, and then I wrote as the caption, "These don't actually exist." I was so mad. I had gone on this long walk, getting some exercise in, and I passed this place that I don't really have much of an opinion of. You and I had been there once before, but they had this a sidewalk sign that said "Pineapple Sangria $9." And probably because I was thirsty, because I was exercising, I was like, I got this on my brain. I'm going to go back there. I'm going to go back there later today. And then, so
your Yelp icon is a fried egg.
Oh, you found me. Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of anonymity there. No, that's fine. Like I said, you can find me very easily. And there are not that many, and most of them I've read on the show anyway. But anyway, I got home, and then I was like, I wanted to stay home. This was the weekend before our road trip, and I just wanted to lay low, but I also had that sangria in my mind. So it was like a really hard decision about whether or not Genevieve and I should go out. And Vives is like, yeah, let's go out. Genevieve always wants to go out. And I'm like, okay, I'll not watch the Mariners game here at home. Let's go out and get some of that pineapple sangria. And so I kind of dragged myself out of the house with that one thing in mind. And then we go, and they're like, oh, you know, I think we just poured the last one. And I just don't believe that for a second. I just don't believe it for a second. And I was just so mad that they're just false advertising. Wait.
You think that they never had a pineapple sangria? Whoa.
No, I'm sure they had. No,
I'm Pete Carroll. Sangria can't melt this steel.
I'm a human. That's my Alex Jones. No, I'm sure they had it at some point, but I also think that they probably did not just pour their last one. They've probably been out for a while. They got this sign out there that's just attracting fat guys like flies, apparently. Like me, to go in there and get a pineapple sangria. And then I just, and also I just don't think the food there is very good. It's like way overpriced. And so I was just kind of like turned off by the whole thing. But this was me just kind of publicly pouting. And I think I was telling you this story because I kind of pouted through dinner that night because I didn't have my sangria. And that's like a very embarrassing memory in my brain. And now this Yelp review is just kind of the manifestation of it. Just living there online, me just pouting out there.
God, if I were willing to take the time to log into Yelp, I would be upvoting this so hard. I'd be saying it was helpful. I'd be favoriting it. I won't because I'd have to start a Yelp account. Yeah, no, but this is my favorite. I can't believe this Yelp review hasn't gone borderline viral because it's great. It's actually like it's really like it's like a little beautiful short story. It's so much more clever than somebody just. It's much more clever than Dr. Chu in New Haven just taking a crap on the Japanese place. This is beautiful. I really would like to compliment it too, but because that's actually a function on Yelp.
So you don't find that obnoxious. I do think though that
because
I now
you're
need to
like
it's
so
one.
Often the case with you. No, Andrew, because as is so often the case with you, you're in on it. Like the whole way that you're writing this is with a level of self-awareness that's usually missing from the Yelp reviews that people write. And in fact, that's why I kind of hate again, if I'm going somewhere, particularly if it's in a town I've never been in. Remember when we were in Austin and we were like trying to find a place to go have a drink that wasn't right in the middle of like the Republic of Texas bike nightmare.
Yeah.
So we were on Yelp trying to kind of get the reviews of some of the places. I mean, it is certainly helpful, I will admit, to have a sort of a hive mind telling you what different places are like. But most of the time when people write stuff on Yelp, they lack all self-awareness and their sense that it's like important to you, like that the place put too much cucumber on something. It's just like, to me, it's like the height. And I understand the irony of what our job is. So for me to say like, why would anyone care about if somebody put the right amount of spice in your nutmeg latte or whatever? Well, why would anyone care what we do? I mean, I don't know. But it does seem like the height of narcissism to think that everybody needs to know your thoughts on every little experience you had. Again, I understand the irony of me saying that on this very program.
Right. I do see that two people – you can't click to see who they are, but apparently two people did flag this as funny. Which I didn't – this is the first time I've gone back to it since that fateful night. So I guess that's good.
Ooh. Now three people have. Also,
wait,
I think
you can
it's
do
cool
it even though you're not logged
and
in?
Useful. I guess those I have the privileges to. I love I love this review from you. It makes me so happy. And I love I was able to click on the emoji of a guy wearing sunglasses to indicate that I think it's cool.
I don't. It's not showing up on my end. Maybe it takes a while to process. Maybe they need to make sure you're not a bot before I receive that that digital praise.
Okay, we are going to need to move on to emails here. So I'm not going to get to talk about this treasure hunt, but that's actually great because I already know what I want to talk about on the show with you tomorrow.
Yes.
One is this crazy treasure hunt that's been going on that like 65,000 people have just been scouring and some of them dying in the desert trying to find what may or may not exist out there. And then also tomorrow I want to talk about this really interesting story of this video that was sort of – you could say passively rolling in a Fred Meyer in the 90s in Washington. And this woman's dad bought a video camera at Fred Meyer and it happened to be the store demo. So it had in it a tape that had just been recording people. And it is extremely fascinating to look at for a bunch of reasons. So we'll talk about all that tomorrow. For now, though, I think we should get on to our emails and that sort of thing.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email every week. I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
All right. We were really going hard on the idioms there during our week on our way to Texas. What was your favorite, you think, of those Texas idioms?
That's a tough question. I would need more. There were hundreds on that page. I almost said thousands. That would be a lie, and then you'd have to write a Yelp review about how I'm an untrustworthy podcaster.
I would not describe that as being cool with sunglasses emoji.
It was funny, but not helpful. I don't know what my favorite was. I need more time to think about it. Do you have one that stuck out to you?
I don't remember a specific one. I just remember loving kind of all of them. That was a really fun day in Marfa, just hanging out in the RV. Reading idioms, our pal Angie there, that was cool. Whitney weighed in. She said, hey guys, I'm time banditing, so I'm just getting to the Texas idiom show. I got a couple expressions from my family that I had to share. My uncle would always refer to things being, quote, as useless as a bucket under a bowl.
I love that so much.
Because you couldn't milk it, right?
Yeah. And now, it's a better version of the coarse one that you're probably thinking of right now.
Yeah, right. So that's, I have to say, like, it sounds like Whitney's granddad was trying to, maybe he just wasn't a coarse person, but maybe he was also trying to protect her young ears from the other one. Which, you know what, up until this very moment, literally this moment, Andrew, I never even thought about what that other one meant.
Yeah.
But I guess it just means that they wouldn't lactate. A bull wouldn't lactate because it's male, so that wouldn't be useful.
Right. Yeah. It's a boar, right? The one you're thinking of, isn't it a boar?
No, I've heard it as
a bull.
That's as useless as breasts on a bull, but think of something more alliterative.
We had to say it. I think that we should just start saying that. Let's be the PC idiom guys. Well, that's as useless as breasts on a boar or a bull.
Whitney continues, my dad, when waiting on anyone in the family, would say, We got a dollar waiting on a dime.
I love
I've heard that one before, too.
Really?
I like that.
I had never
like
heard
that.
It. Meaning that you're kind of more, like, the person who's waiting is more important than
yes.
the person they're waiting on. That's such
shade. Yeah, we
shade.
Got a dollar waiting on a dime. I know it is. It's very shady. It's very shade throwy. It's like my time and me as a person is worth more than what's happening right now. You should be lucky to get a ride to church with me.
Yeah.
Okay? We got a dollar waiting on a dime right now.
Great. I'm going to use it.
Yeah, that's pretty clever. And then Whitney says, they have both passed, and it always makes me smile when I think of those sayings. Signed, Whitney, a San Diego 10. Now, we have arrived at what, for you, Andrew, is probably a stressful point in the show. Because you forwarded me this email and you said, if you had your druthers, we would not read this. But you also said, you'll probably want to read this. And you were 100% right.
Well, here's the deal with this. This is an email sent from Nancy. And I don't want Nancy to think that I didn't enjoy reading this email. I think this is a fascinating story. And I knew that, I mean, it is a good story, but it is also very gross. And so she even says that, you know, this is a warning, this is a very gross story. So in my, like, let me put it this way. If you were on vacation this week, I would read this and I would think that's a fascinating story. It probably would fascinate the listeners, but it just crosses the gross line for me and I would leave it off. But I'm not like gonna, well, I'm not gonna like quit over this or anything.
Well, what I was gonna say is I've got, we'll see how that meeting on Monday goes.
Maybe it won't be.
I have my little stopwatch with me. If you want, you can just go do whatever else you need to do around the house, and I'll just do this for 2 minutes. We'll do exactly. I'll give exactly 2 minutes to Nancy's email. Would you like to just not be around for this?
What did you tell me in your response to me? You said, well, no, I think it's a good story. I mean, you can just, like, hum the Pledge of Allegiance or something while I'm reading it.
Well, no, plug your ears and sing the Star-Spangled Banner.
Oh, is that an expression? Is that an idiom?
Well, no, but it's, you know, but you know how, like, when you're a kid and you don't want to hear something?
Yeah.
You plug your ears and you sing so that you just kind of can't hear whatever is being said. Do you remember what your go-to song was? I feel like everybody has a go-to song that they would sing when plugging their ears. I'm going to turn Doogie down.
Unfortunately, mine, I wasn't very original. I think I would just like close my ears and go, la, 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 la.
Feel like it was a tight race between, for me, it was always the Star Spangled Banner for some reason. And I think also, da, 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 da. I think that might've been my mom's.
That was, the song that she sang when she didn't want to hear something.
Yeah, if you were like, okay, mom, don't listen. Plug your ears. She'd plug her ears. Da, 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 da. Actually, whereas for me, it would be, oh, say, can you see? Sorry, that was a little pitchy, dog. I was plugging my ears. Everybody just get off my back.
Ironically, mine was the Doogie Howser theme song.
Well played. Well, I mean, are you going to stick around for this or not?
Well, I mean, I've already read it. I've now read it twice. I read it last night.
Right,
I read it this
point.
Morning before I sent it to you. Like, my brain is already scarred from this. But I think we've given our listeners a fair understanding of what's about to happen. And we're near the end of the show. So if you are eating right now, maybe stop eating.
Particularly if you're eating at McDonald's. Mm-hmm.
And we're off.
Okay, Nancy says, hola, friendos. I hesitated to send this until Luke talked about eating big league jerky, and I figured it couldn't be much worse. Feel free to seek out a Lone Star tick after reading this. I think you're thinking of jerky stuff, listener Nancy, but that's fine. We talked about big league chew and jerky stuff. But anyway. And then the quote about your friend Peter's mom saying that she would dig through shit. Harken me back to this gem. My partner had her appendix removed, and her hospital roommate was a woman who had taken herself and her kid to McDonald's, whereupon they ordered meat sandwiches. By the way, weird how when you call a hamburger a meat sandwich, it just changes.
I know.
It changes the vibe.
Yeah.
I'll have two of your finest meat sandwiches. What kind of a freak are you? Hey, give me a couple burgers. Why, absolutely. You're one of our leading Americans. Isn't that strange? Calling them meat sandwiches really does color the whole thing differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
They ordered meat sandwiches. Her son bit into a piece of metal in his burger and stopped eating it. I'll add, as one typically does.
Yes.
It seemed to be from some meatpacking machine. Can you say lawsuit? However, the mom had already finished her burger. X-rays in the ER revealed that, oh yes, she had in fact swallowed metal. Her lawyer advised them the X-rays were good evidence, but the real kicker would be if they could recover said metal. The hospital staff refused to be involved in shit searching. It's funny, and I understand it, by the way. Sorry, we're being strafed by ICE, and you think I'm kidding. Mm. Literally, the Border Patrol, at about this time every day, for some reason, does a circle over our neighborhood. And I'm just going to leave that, and I'll leave that right where it is. I'm just going to slowly walk away from my thoughts on why we need the Border Patrol patrolling Lake Whatcom in Bellingham. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I think it's interesting, by the way, that the hospital staff, which I'm sure deals often with human feces when there's a medical component, you know, how they were like, no. We'll do this if it's medically related. We ain't going to do this to be part of your lawsuit. That's
mm-hmm, right.
That's a YP. That is not an MP.
Yeah, right.
You know? And so, like, and that's fair, by the way. That's totally fair. Unless you want to cut them in. I mean, you might have also just said, would you do this for a percentage, for a finder's fee?
Right. Or, yeah, somebody can, like, kind of freelance that the way some police officers will sometimes, you know, moonlight as security guards or something.
That's right. The hospital refused to be involved in the shit searching, but Gamely provided the husband with protective goggles, a mask, a plastic knife, and a bucket. And he went searching. He was in the bathroom with her bucket for so long, I was sure he died. Now, I'll just say here, Andrew, what price, sex life? What price? Like, you may collect more money from the McDonald's Corporation if you find the metal in the number two, but I don't think I'd probably ever be able to feel romantically close to somebody whose poop I had dug through in that fashion. I'm not saying, look, married life and kid having life, I know it all gets weird. Things get weird, things get bodily. But like, I think this must have put a dent in their love life, don't you think?
Well, first of all, I'm officially not part of this conversation. Secondly...
Wait, I thought your brain was already scarred.
Well, yeah. But
I thought you were already dead inside.
Every time I'm out. I didn't even think about it like kind of romantically like that because... And I just don't want to even say this sentence. But to complete my thought, if I had to do this service for either you or Genevieve, I would probably pick Genevieve.
Right. I get that. I get that because you guys are – you're closer. She's less gross to you than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I get that.
But I don't want – I don't want to do it.
But, but your choice would also be to not do it for either of us.
Yeah, I mean, when you say like at what price, I mean that's the thing. If there are medical problems that are going to be happening down the line and you mm-hmm. really need the money from this company to cover those mm-hmm. costs and this is the only way to do it, then I guess you're really in a pickle. Sorry to bring up food at a time like this.
Let me ask you this. That is, by the way, one of the things I had for lunch today, a pickle. Not to brag.
Well, let me just finish now, my thought really quickly, though. Okay, I was going to say, sorry. So if you need the money to pay for costs associated with their mistake and the only way to do it, that's fine. But if this is kind of like you had a scare, you went to the hospital, your insurance covered most of it, and now you can sue and that money is just kind of like, and now we have a bunch of money from McDonald's, I would not dig through shit for that. If this was the end of the story, I would say we had a bad experience. We're not going to be able to sue, but I would do anything for a lawsuit, but I won't do that.
Meatloaf.
More food.
What if they gave you one of the best plastic knives they had in the cafeteria?
Oh yeah. Well, then sure. Oh, sure.
I don't know why that dazzling deed extra grosses me out. Something about just... Well, we have this plastic knife from the salad bar. You can use that. It's something about using a food utensil
that's a good point.
Context is really upsetting to me.
Yeah, you would think at a hospital they would have something that at least makes it seem like this is something that has to happen as a procedure from time to time. Like this is our, this is our whatever mesh tool that we use when we have to do something like this. Not, well, here's a packet of relish and a plastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hospital. They have a machine for centrifuging poop and getting whatever needs to come out of it, you would think. I mean, this is, again, not a rare occurrence that they're trying to analyze somebody's scat.
Yeah, yeah, and I also don't know why the hospital wouldn't say, well, we're not going to do it for you, but for X amount of money, you can pay for that service. You know, I can go get extra checkups if I want to, if I'm willing to pay the doctor.
If MC Scat Cat goes to the bathroom, is it MC Scat Cat Scat?
I think so. You have to. Okay. That's how you track an MC Scat Cat.
Yeah. Through its scat. I'm seeing Scat Cat Scat everywhere here. They were just here. By the way, the kicker on this is that he never found the actual medal, Nancy writes, but he was awarded the Husband of the Century Award in my mind. Well, maybe. He also could have been a grifter who just really wanted to get as much money out of McDonald's as possible. Now, this is terrible. I'm not trying to take this to some kind of a tort reform place, Andrew, but I will say this, and maybe part of it's because long, long ago, when I worked at NPR, I covered that story of the people who claimed they had found a human finger in some chili at Wendy's, but in fact, they had put it in there. And so maybe I'm just a little bit sort of have a jaundiced eye towards this whole thing. Look, if I ate some metal in a burger, I would be really grossed out. I'd probably never want to go to McDonald's again. If I had to have any medical procedure done, I would want that to be covered in a minute. Mm-hmm. But I think we live in a day and age where the vast majority of people, if they go through that, their thought is maybe, unfortunately, not, I just want to be made whole. I just want to have, like, I want to be compensated for the time lost from work while I was at the hospital where they're checking this whole thing out. But, like, I think most people now would be like, payday. You would just see dollar signs. You would be like, what is the maximum pain? And I might too. I might also really, if in the situation, because particularly when it's a giant company like McDonald's, you kind of have this, well, they got deep pockets. Like, it's almost like you sort of hit the lotto. Now, the reason I said I don't want to go all tort reform on it is because there is that really good documentary. We started the show talking about documentaries, and we will end the show. Is the hot coffee documentary about that famous story of the woman who sued McDonald's when the coffee she ordered burned her lap. And that was always held up as an example of the most frivolous of frivolous lawsuits. But what the documentary really gets into is how really – actually profoundly medically and physically damaging this was, because the coffee was scalding and this was an older woman and it just really hurt her. Like, her life really went off the rails from this. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be out there giving, you know, being too judgy of people who are bringing lawsuits. But I do think we live in a day and age where, like, it would be rare if those people who ate the metal went there, pooped it out, told McDonald's, yeah, it was $1,100 for the hospital room, got the $1,100 and just went on with their life. That just is not a scenario that seems to play out anymore.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was trying to say before. Like, if I absolutely had to do this because I'm having long-term problems from this and I need to sue the company so that I can get all this stuff taken care of and it's truly their fault, then you do what you got to do sometimes. I mean, I'm a guy who I wouldn't scoop litter boxes for the first at least 10 years of cat ownership. I'd let it fill up and I would dump the whole thing out, which I know is horribly wasteful, but I'm like, I'll be damned if I'm going to take a little shovel and be playing in a sandbox full of poop every day. Well, I've grown up a little bit and you just kind of, and I'm sure people with kids can speak to this way better than I can, that you kind of grow calluses over your gross parts, the things that you kind of gross you out a little bit. Like, you get
well, that's
used
what they say. We're more calloused in the gross parts.
Yes, that is what they say. So anyway, I understand that you do what you have to do sometimes. But yeah, if this is just kind of a, well, we can get rich if I – because – if that's the case, then it's like going on a game show and saying, okay, well, we'll just give you $2 million if you, you know, use this plastic knife to go through your fiance or your partner's excrement. I would say, no, I'm not going on that game show.
That was, by the way, one of the more troubling episodes of Double Dare.
I know.
That I saw as a kid. And that's when I knew the end was near for them.
Yeah.
When they had the kids going through human feces with a spork.
So what song are we going to go out with today?
Can I just, because we're at the end of the show and everyone stopped listening, can we talk about one thing that is just for you and me?
Yeah.
I consider this to be our time now, okay. Andrew.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. Let's just do one horribly gross conversation, get everyone to stop listening, and then we'll just go over our business. How are you doing, Luke?
I'm doing great, but this is what I want to talk about with you. Okay, so last night, our Seattle Mariners played a really great and an interesting game mm-hmm. because they were getting – they were not just getting no hit. They had not even reached first base in any way through six innings, I think. Justin Verlander – maybe it was five innings, but it was – a long time where Justin Verlander was just dominating the Mariners, and then they managed to actually come back and win the game. It was very exciting. You and I and the fun-loving criminals were all jabbering away on text about this. But I just didn't know if you knew this part. I was do you know that technically Dyson's bunt to get aboard is considered bad form in baseball? That was the first hit of the game for the Mariners, was a drag bunt by Gerard Dyson. And that's actually – that's like considered unsportsmanlike.
I'm really glad you brought this up because I wanted to talk to you about this as well. The only reason I knew that was because I was listening to the first part of the game. And so when I heard that bunt, I'm also watching it on Twitter. I had some real problems getting my grill going last night. I could go on forever about that. I don't know what happened.
Let me heat your grill. That's because you're about that charcoal life.
Yeah, but it's never been a problem. I've been using charcoal for a decade at least, and it's never been a problem. I don't know if it was the wind or if I got some bunk charcoal. But anyway, so I'm out there, and I'm just like struggling getting this thing lit last night. And I'm listening to the game, and I'm kind of following on Twitter while I'm waiting for the grill to heat up. And then I do see people kind of – I didn't see anybody complaining about the bunt breaking up the no-hitter or actually the perfect game up to that point. But I saw a bunch of people almost like – pre-complaining about it, saying if you have a problem with this, then you're dumb. And I was like, well, who's saying they have a problem with it? And then
they
of course,
were pre-complaining about the backlash if a Mariner reached base by bunting.
Yes, kind of saying, I hope you don't have a problem with that. You know, our buddy Tom Wassel being like, anybody who complains about this is off the rails or whatever. And so I was like, oh, it must be one of those kind of unwritten rules of baseball. And then
has so many of.
Yes, and then this morning, I'm listening to the radio, and I was actually dying to kind of hear more background on that, and I got to hear one segment actually on Tom's show today where they were talking about, coaches kind of teach you it's bad form if somebody's going for a no-hitter to bunt to break that up. But, I mean, as a newbie to baseball, if I can just give my hot take right away, I realize that I'm a newbie, but I think that that was just – I think that that's kind of dumb. And to use a more specific argument in this case, I will parrot what I heard on the radio today, which is, this is the sixth inning. We battle back to win. It's not like it was the ninth inning and the other team, is up 10-0. There's no way you're going to come back to win, and you just bunt just to F up this guy's moment in history. Like, this was still a viable game, as we clearly demonstrated.
Yeah, baseball has so many weird, like, just unwritten rules that it seems like some baseball players are still obsessed with enforcing. It's like if you hit a home run and you watch the ball, like, at all for like
– oh, that happened yesterday too.
Like, for like 1 second. Like, if you hit a home run and you don't just like immediately go into like essentially a run, like a trot, that's considered like you're showing the pitcher up. Which is like crazy to me because like if I hit a home run, I'd probably get a folding chair out and sit at home plate and just like admire that I did that. It seems so hard. And like it's weird, but baseball seems like it has all, like, unlike the other two sports, the other two major sports, basketball and football, it just seems like you have so many unwritten rules about – because, that guy, whoever it is, if they hit a home run and then they supposedly slowly – round the bases, or they watch the ball for too long, or they flip the bat, heaven forbid, they're probably going to get hit the next time they come up. The pitcher is probably going to throw the ball as hard as they can at their physical body. It's just like, it's so nuts. And like the idea that you couldn't do whatever you need to do to, and it's easy for me to say because Dyson's our guy and that inning had a really good outcome for the Mariners. But I would say that if a Mariner pitcher had a no-hitter or a perfect game going in the same position, it's like you have, here's the way baseball works. You have the grass that is in bounds, in fair territory, and your job is to put the baseball on some of that grass or dirt and get to the base before they can get the baseball and throw it to the base. Whatever that looks like, that's all fair game to me. Like, I don't see how on earth bunting is considered dirty pool.
Yeah, especially, again, at that point in the game. And I have to mention this while this is just our time. Have you been following this Puig story? Because that whole watching the ball, like, Puig took like 90 minutes to like walk around the bases after just clobbering it out of Dodger Stadium yesterday, and they were playing the Mets, and like the Mets fans are just, and the Mets are not having a good season, and Puig just like hit that ball, and he just stood there and admired it for a while, and then just flipped the bat away, and then just slowly took his bases, and then I think going from first to second, I think the first base coach like kind of yelled something at him. He turns around, starts running backwards, and just, you can visibly see him say "F you" to the other team's coach. Or I guess it wouldn't have been the first base coach, whatever, the other team's coach, wherever he was.
I mean, I guess it could be. I saw the headline on the Puig thing. I didn't actually watch the trot. I just started following a picture again because this is our time. I used to have a drop of Obama saying "it is our time," which would have been perfect for this new segment we've hatched. I just started following this. I'm going to just guess at his name. I think it's Brandon McCarthy. And he is a pitcher for the Dodgers, and he is very, very funny on Twitter. And he wrote the other day that he can't get it out of his head that when he's pitching against the New York Mets, he is in control of whether or not Jerry Seinfeld is going to feel happy that day.
Oh, wow. That is...
Is that a pretty quality tweet from a major league pitcher?
Yes, it is. I mean, not only is it kind of clever, but there must be an element of truth to that as well, right? That's actually...
Yeah, he also tweeted out when it was... Yeah, you know, when it was... I guess it was maybe on Memorial Day. He tweeted out, I'm paraphrasing here, I'm going to screw it up, but he basically said, like, let's please remember everyone who served and died for our freedom. To celebrate it, here's a $35 hat.
Yeah.
Because like the Major League MLB was releasing a special Memorial Day hat that, of course, is a way to make money.
Yeah.
And this guy who pitches in the MLB, in MLB, I guess you'd call it. You don't need the Major League Baseball.
Mm, yeah.
But like, he's totally taking shots at it. I was like, good for that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know about that guy because the Stu bot probably retweets him or something. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I just want to talk about that bunt with you because I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, and you don't have a problem with it either. I wasn't sure if you were
going
to be. I couldn't believe I would live in a world where you would be a purist.
Honestly hate all of those baseball... I don't know why I got to take this. I don't know why I got to take this totally boring conversation and turn it into something that's probably going to piss people off. But
you think that batters shouldn't wear helmets?
That's all. Some part of me can't help but feel like there's some undercurrent of like racism in the whole thing, which I can't explain it. But I just feel like there's a lot of weird good old boy rules in baseball that don't really make sense and that are kind of. They're sort of anti-celebratory. Now, listen, if anything, there's a dearth of African Americans playing in Major League Baseball. There are a lot of people from Latin America and the Caribbean in baseball. And I don't have any evidence for this. And, you know, you have, look, a white pitcher beaning a white batter is probably the most typical outcome for this. So I don't know why I'm saying that it feels like there's racism involved. It just feels like it's sort of like baseball feels like to do something celebratory is just kind of is it's not how we do it in baseball. And it just somehow feels, maybe it's not even racist, it just feels old and fusty to me. And it's just like, why do we gotta have these dumb unwritten rules? Why can't we just have fun? By the way, I don't know if like the ghost of Manuel Noriega was seen in my neighborhood, but like this helicopter situation is like, it's like I'm in LA. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I could. Yeah, that one, I think even the listeners would be able to hear.
They couldn't hear the other one?
To rephrase what you're saying a little bit.
Yeah, maybe it's not racist. Maybe it's just more no funnest.
But if I'm trying to bring race, desperately to support your argument here.
Don't feel like you have to if I went to a weird place with it.
Well, let me just ask. Are you saying that only white people should play baseball? No, just kidding. Are you saying that... Are you saying that it's like these quote unquote unwritten rules and mores of the game are a holdover from when it really was a white-dominated, in fact, black people weren't allowed to even play in the league era. And the game has moved on, and society has moved on, yet we're still hanging on to these rules from that old racist era?
Yes, I think that is kind of what I'm trying to say. Thank you. That's much more well put than what I said. But I don't really have anything to back that up. I don't know. I just have a weird feeling about it. Whenever I feel like athletes, and in particular athletes of color, are being told that their behavior wasn't okay after they were successful at the sport thing they do, I just get a weird feeling about that.
Yeah, I mean, if some sort of celebrations got out of hand and it slowed down an already slow game, and we had a rash of batters who were just like just doing this all the time, and it was just really messing things up, then sure, you implement a real rule, not an unsaid rule. But I don't think that, like, at your home stadium, your star player just crushing a baseball, and then the fans, the ones who paid money to be in that home stadium, you don't think that everybody in the stands loved him doing that, with the exception of the few, you know, transplants and visitors from New York? No, of course they loved it. That is not a problem for the game. On the other hand, it's kind of fun to see the other team get so upset about it. Like, I'd rather be talking about this than just being like, oh yeah, whatever, he showboated a little bit and nobody cares. Like, I kind of like the some of my best friends are Mets fans, so I don't want to.
You're friends with Jerry Seinfeld.
I don't want to. I don't want to revel in the sports pain of anybody else. I have no beef against the Mets and a lot of the teams that I root for.
We've even said we think Mr. Met is a really good mascot.
That's right, and I think that the guy who flicked off the the opponent's fans should have kept his job as Mr. Met. But anyway, having said that, the fact that the other team did hate it, and then the catcher says something to Puig when Puig, you know, comes into home, like, I love the drama around that, and that it did get their skin.
That's a really good point, because I want to see Puig's first at bat. Here I am. I'm basically supporting the system now, because if Puig doesn't get beaned his first, well, actually, he may have had another at bat that game, so I guess that would be the real question.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know.
Because, I mean, this is where it's like, I think it's a dumb thing that they have these unwritten rules, but I do think it creates some interesting, as you said, interesting drama, like, because now you're the pitcher for the other team, and what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to bean Puig the next time he comes up. That's how the unwritten rule works. But the umpire knows the unwritten rule also, so he is going to throw you out because he knows you did not accidentally hit Yasiel Puig.
Yeah.
So now do you get suspended and lose money over the honor of your team? Like, what do you do as the pitcher who has to face him next?
The coach should always just have you know, let's say that your starting pitcher is basically done for the game. Just have one really shitty pitcher in the bullpen.
That's right.
So you just put him in when it's time to bean somebody, and then you pull just him have out a, again.
Just basically have a Steve Scheffler or Frank Borkowski. Who you just, those are old Sonics, you just put in to just come in. And I mean, hockey has that, you know, enforcers.
That's right, enforcers.
They got guys that are in there to just basically crush other dudes as revenge. So maybe baseball could just have a guy whose job is to go in there and pitch and get tossed out. I would do that job. First of all, it would not hurt the guys I was hitting at all.
That's a good point.
My hardest throw would not even... It would be like, did a mosquito bite me?
It'd be totally symbolic. Like the new, instead of actually walking batters this year, we talked about this on the show, actually. Now you can just, you know, what, throw a symbol of some sort. You can just indicate that you're going to walk this batter and they can just take their base. You don't have to actually throw all four balls now. You could just kind of have somebody who goes out there and just indicates that this is where I'm meaning you and I need you to clinch now.
That's I know we got to wrap this up now, but this has been fun. This last 8 minutes has been very fun.
I'm
going
to move it to the front of the show.
Yes. Good stuff. a whole other conversation could have to do with, how is it that baseball players are not more visibly physically hurt by being hit by those pitches? Now, sometimes a pitch will catch a guy in the middle of his back. I'm talking like on his spine, and he'll be hurt and he'll be down on it. He'll take a knee for 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. But like, you hit a baseball player in the shoulder, in the leg, just about anywhere that's not, again, literally that place in between their shoulder blades. And they just, it's like it never happened. Now, is it that they're just pretending it didn't hurt? Or is it they have been hit so many times that their body has physiologically changed to where it does not hurt them anymore, which is insane.
Well, obviously, I don't have any answers on that. My assumption is it's like when you hurt yourself really bad around the house, like it's dumb as it sounds, like stubbing your toe, I think, is still one of the most painful things you can go through if you just accidentally, you know, hit your toe around the house or something. But if there's a bunch of people over, you know, you might just try to, like, if you're by yourself, you might just kind of curl up in a fetal position next to the couch for a while and just whimper. But, you know, if you're hosting a dinner party and that happens, you might just say, "Oh, that hurts," and "Oh, it's fine," and walk it off, right? Like, they must put a lot of mental energy into not showing weakness and just kind of moving forward.
It's like my version of that was when we were doing Livewire and we had Jason Isbell performing, and he and his wife wanted to do two extra songs at the end of the show. Like, they did two songs and the crowd was loving them because they're pretty awesome. And he was like, "Hey, can we just do a couple more songs?" I was like, "Yeah." So the show was over. So I was like, "Cool, I'll sit in the audience for once because we're not doing the show anymore." And I'm like in my suit and everything. And I'm sitting in the front row just like watching their music and really enjoying it. And then it's time to jump back up on the stage and say, like, "All right, good night, everybody." And instead of taking the stairs, because it was kind of a long process, I decided to just try to jump onto the stage at Revolution Hall in Portland. And I just crushed my shin. Like, I missed it by like 6 inches. So one leg got up on the stage fine. The other leg was just running behind and just murderated my shin. Like, I wanted to basically, if no one was around, I would have laid on the ground going, "Owie, owie, 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 owie," holding it. But because 800 people were watching, I had to gamely limp over to the mic, or try to not limp, and just be like, "Jason Isbell, everybody." And then when I went backstage and looked at it, it was gory what I had done to my leg.
It must be embarrassing. I can't even imagine what it's like to trip going on the stage. Like, that must be super embarrassing.
It was, I mean, you've been lucky.
Probably the type
in this
of
life,
thing,
Andrew.
Probably the type of thing you never get over.
I'm so sorry I gave you shit about that. I was so glad
you made a joke of that. That the live show, I tripped going on stage, everybody. And you made a joke of it going, and I thought your joke was really good. It was perfect. You said, you know, introduce me. You said he trips coming on stage. It doesn't mean he thinks he's better than everybody else. I'm so, like, that would be so much more embarrassing if everybody treated it like something they couldn't talk about. You know what I mean?
All right. I got a couple of show title ideas that I wrote down.
Oh, good. Good. What do you got?
They're kind of both me, which feels a little bit narcissistic, but why should this show be any different than the other ones? Sangria Can't Melt This Steel.
Okay, that's not bad.
And Breasts on a Bowl.
I would go sangria on that one. I also wrote down Yelp, which I thought was a funny spoof at the beginning.
Okay.
It would have to be Sangria Can't Melt these Steel Beams. Is that what it was? Sangria Can't Melt.
I forget what old Win Forever said, but yeah, some version. Oh, can I just say, a ghost is bored. You can't see me doing this. You can't see me doing this, but I'm going, mwah. Perfect.
The title of yesterday's show.
So beautiful.
If you weren't a Wilco fan, you'd be like, what? Right. Huh?
But yeah. Carrie was like, Carrie thought it was funny, but then she's like, where do you think he thought of that? I was like, oh, it's actually a Wilco record too. So it works on like multiple levels.
I thought I could get away with that. Yeah, cool. All right. But what about music though? I thought there'd be a good like song, as crazy as it sounds, about reviews or critics or something, because I wanted to harken back to that Yelp story, but I'm not really seeing much with those search terms.
There's a song by Leaky Lee called Complaint Department.
Okay, let's do that. I don't know tons of Leaky Lee, but I think every time it's a her, right?
How about you play it from your end so that I make sure that we get the all the audio level right?
Okay.
Can you do that?
Yeah,
Complaint
I got it right here. Leaky
Off
Lee
of the
is,
album Youth Novel.
Leaky Lee is a woman, right? Is that her name, or does she perform like under that name?
You know, I don't know a ton about her. I have some of her music, but let's see here. I'm leaking her up. Her name is actually Lee Leek Timoj Zacherson. known as Leaky Lee, is a Swedish singer, songwriter, and model. Her music often blends elements of indie pop, dream pop, and electronic. I like all of those things.
Yes, you do. The next line says, Luke Burbank would really dig this.
Luke Burbank would really like to end a show with this music, and look, it's happening. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Me, oh my, you thought you had something strong. Me, oh my, it turned out that you were wrong. Me, oh my, you love.
Power out.